Oh, good morning. This is Cohen Meanderer. I'm Jason Demro, and I've been listening to a Spanish economist, a Spanish economics historian, and it brings to mind again some of the things that I have pondered and learned in the realm of science. The first thing is you shouldn't reduce everything down to terms of science. In fact, the less you do that, the better it is. I don't tend to like heavily managed situations, and this was brought up from this, from what I was just listening to. Management reduces choices. When you measure something, you start putting a box around the things that you study. You start to, I don't even know if it's a good thing. It's an assumption. It's something that, it all of a sudden becomes your gauge for better or worse. And I mean, specifically for better or for worse, if your body has a high temperature, that is bad. It has been looked at. People have decided that it is a great measure of I guess basic health. And fever, which is considered to be an ailment, is actually just your body temperature being higher than the average, which is funny. I tend to use the 150-year rule. I used to call it the 100-year rule, but I've gotten older and I've decided to push things back just a little bit. How much was known 150 years ago? And in knowing or not knowing, how appreciably has life gotten better? And, science can tout a lot of things. They can come out and they say, well, we have been able to reduce poverty. And you go, was poverty really a studied thing back in the day? Was it considered to be a malady? Or was it just considered to be life? Did people really beat themselves up too much about being poor? I dare say 150 years ago, it was a question of who were rich and what would they do? And rich people, I don't know if they were really looked very highly on. And in fact, from the perspective of the times back in the past, being rich meant you were usually obese. You had too much, and you were easily taken in by excesses, and those excesses would often be your undoing. You might not live as long. You might, your possibilities of catching strange diseases that just that most people just didn't get happened. And I think it's kind of a mindset. And for all the wonders of Jordan Peterson talking about things, they have to understand a psychologist basically ends up being this weird, overeducated life coach. You know, we got life coaches. You could call yourself a life coach and you didn't need all the crazy education that was required, mostly an indoctrination into an orthodoxy. And you had to kind of, well, you had to be able to stay licensed. One of the problems that Jordan Peterson has started having is that they say, you are too much of a maverick. We can't abide you. Therefore, we're going to remove your license. And he kind of laughs and goes, you know what? I don't need your stupid license. You know, he spent his whole life getting the license, protecting the license. But now he's gotten to the point to where it's like, you know what? Do I even need your license? Now he's not gonna be able to hang out a shingle that says he's a psychologist, perhaps, after they take away his psychologist license. They would love to take care to get rid of his PhD to reduce his ability to have the stature he has, which that's what that piece of paper does. We used to think that once you got the piece of paper, you were somewhat independent. And now it's like, well, we're going to claw that back. And we're going to say that if you get too popular, if you get too noted, and if you become too much of a maverick in this field, above and beyond your peers, we can defrock you. We can say that you are no longer, you know, you no longer hold a doctor of philosophy in psychology or a doctor of psychology. You don't get that anymore. And that informs me. I've often thought, I said, I need to go ahead and push forward and get my higher degree. Lisa, who's very pragmatic and sees the economics of it, doesn't see that it will really profit us. You know, I probably won't get a better paying job in this kind of by doing this. Now, I do think that it might give me the opportunity to more, which is the good thing about the master's degree. I get there are certain occupations that I can have because of my master's degree, like, say, for instance, teaching, which is kind of the natural outgrowth of experience, knowledge, aging. It isn't really older, but it has some of the things. It comes in handy for some of the things that you do the older you get. You know, you tend to have more knowledge. You tend to have done more things. You tend to have thought more. Although, to be honest, we don't really want people thinking too much. I think it's hilarious when educators talk about critical thinking. And you go, we're not really into critical thinking. We want efficient work units. That's what we want from people. That's what we want people to become in a much larger corporatized factory-like world. The sad part is the world tends to be defined by economy. And that's sad too. Anything, like, it gets back to my original idea. Anything, once you start to study something and you start making correlations, whether they're good correlations or bad correlations, whatever, once you start doing that, you start building boxes around things. This is what you do to accomplish that. In this podcast I was listening to, he was talking about the history of the GDP, a somewhat young as an age, a somewhat young indicator. Could be valuable. Some people question that. It's always tricky to question things once it enters into the orthodoxy. Now, I'm not an orthodox person. I am here to try to impress God, because God has something. God has a state of being that I want. He offers it, so I'm really lucky there. It isn't like I'm just being hopeful that if I impress God, he'll do nice things for me. He's already said. And I've got some evidence that he really comes through on these things. It's a gift that he is willing to share. A status that he has that he wants to share with other people. It's just his thing. You could call it his economy if you like. So I look things at that, on that level, and it's somewhat amazing to me how little. Okay. He doesn't want to rule all behavior in life. It just doesn't seem like it's very interesting to him or to what he hopes to do. He wants you to become a better person. I think it has to do with being godly. The kind of, for a better, lack of a better way to describe it, somebody that has more of the attributes that he displays. I get every impression that this is something that was, impressed upon him as a developing person, and that he is propagating the same thing because he trusts those that came before him. Of course, that's getting into a realm that most people don't believe. And you go, well, it doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. It is reality. It is the way things are. People spend way too much time coming up with their own private theories and stuff like that. And I said, you know, I don't think I'm particularly an empiricist at all, but I tend to just say what I see. And I hope it's not too manufactured. I hope I haven't manufactured a lot. I hope I am building upon things that I see that I think are universal. I think a lot of the things that we study, the things in science, are not universal. And as we go along, we start to, you know, as we are able to try to lengthen our vision. You know, these space telescopes give us interesting further vision. We're able to see further than we have before. And as we do, we see new things or different things we hadn't considered before. And as we try to bring them into, I call it the schema, how things really work. And we can bring them in and say, does this fit with our schema? And if it doesn't, the tendency of most people is to hang tenaciously on to whatever schema they have now and try to fit new things into it, even things that don't really fit, instead of saying, you know what, I can change my schema. And I think over time I have changed my schema a lot to take into account things that I have seen. It makes it so that when I go to fix things, which is basically what I do, I come at it in different ways than normal. Like I said, unorthodox. I'm unorthodox. I don't just follow a flow chart. Although, let me tell you, flow charts are pretty good. The whole concept that you can flow chart out almost everything. And all you have to do is be able to answer simple questions as to whether you're going to go down one tree, decision tree branch or another. It's not a terrible way of approaching things. I think you can easily get off into the weeds. I'm using lots of it's not a euphemism. It's an analogy, a lot of analogies. I'm a difficult person to deal with because I often range further and into more interesting places than other people do who have come up with schemas that work for them. And so I am often in places where other people will not go. I don't know if it's a dare not tread thing. I don't know if I'm really all that daring. I think for my part, given my outlook, I'm pretty conservative. You know, I'm not much of a risk taker. But maybe because, I don't know if I take in more. And it's hard to say because you often end up using the terms of science to do this. And I don't think I really use science. I don't experiment like that very much. I speculate like mad. But then I keep looking around saying, so do I think that's going to work? Can I see evidence of this speculation being useful, for lack of a better term for it? Have I gone down rat hole? Sure. Anyway, well, it doesn't matter. When we look at things and we put them in boxes, we almost – in a way, and people have done a little bit of study on this, and it's been crushed down because it really says that the whole scientific method is somewhat dangerous in putting things into boxes, saying that these are the boundaries of acceptability of this and that, we start tainting information. At the heart of the scientific method, and that's what it is, you have to make a hypothesis. And to make a wild hypothesis is to get yourself into trouble. So you only make very small changes and try to study a small hypothesis. And then you see what happens. And when something happens, that you didn't expect. And that's the whole thing about a hypothesis. You say, if we change this variable, we expect to see this result. And when it comes back and we don't see that result, it, you know, it's like, oh, okay. You're supposed to throw out that hypothesis. Now, scientists are iterators over and over and over again. They are supposed to work the scientific method constantly over and over again. Now, they may do something very long term, which I think is really what I don't know if it pays the best, but I think if you can talk people into it and say, well, it's going to take me 10 years to collect the data to really be able to know if what I am hypothesizing really is true. That's great, because then for the next 10 years, you've pretty much got your life lined out. You know, I'm doing this. I'm collecting this kind of data. You don't want to get off that beaten path, because the people who are paying you to do this, a university, some back or something, they might choose to cut off the money and say, what are you doing? What are you doing with my money? You're jeopardizing my cash flow by not just doing exactly what you were told to do. This is science. And today, science is everything. There really isn't any money outside of science. And science toward enrichment. So everything's being put in those boxes. Everything is viewed in that way. The quote science that gets done is basically all tied to how much money is spent. The whole idea of climate change is very important, because it is very scary, and that scare is that fearfulness has been translated into money. It's lucrative. Smart person knows that this is coming, and they capitalize on this. Who's a good example of it? Al Gore. Al Gore was a legislator. Then he became the vice president, and then he saw a lucrative opportunity in fear-mongering over larger weather patterns, what we call climate. Now, this is all funny, because climate really is one of these sciences. Therefore, it's something that's kind of been put in a box. It had always been, before the last about, 15 or 20 years, it was always somewhat kooky science. Only strange edge people would get involved in climate science. And that's a new term. Who knows what it was called before? Maybe a branch of environmentalism, which really is a static state. Everything you hear about the climate is things must stay within, it's might be why I use the term the box. They have decided a box of what's safe and what people are willing to make predictions based on. And that the most important thing is to stay inside that box. So we don't want the temperature to go up too much, and we don't want the temperature in the aggregate to go down too much, because we want to stay inside this box. 50 years ago, when I was a kid, We were all scared to death about global cooling. The biggest evidence that we had was that there had been ice ages, and there had been periods of time where it was icy. It was cold. And food production really went down. All these things really went poorly. So everybody was quite terrified of the fact that another ice age would come for some reason. You know, the sun would dim. Things that had happened in the past was the big eruption of a volcano would put this, you know, would darken the sky, reflect sunlight, or not let enough sunlight come in, and our planet would get colder. And that was a real fear into the 1970s. I think the whole idea of global warming was actually from not necessarily some maverick person who had some new research, new information. I think it had more to do with somebody trying to be sensational in the press by saying the exact opposite of what everybody else was saying, because that gives you a little bit of notoriety in a field of study that is pretty obscure otherwise. Trying to predict the future based on, you don't even know what the variables are. You do know that when volcanoes go off, the temperature of the earth goes down. Of course, there's some people who say, wait a minute, now wouldn't that be, you know, we started thinking about greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, which is a key constituent in life, is now a great villain. Recast is now carbon, and everybody's supposed to be reducing their carbon footprint, which is silly. What? Are we supposed to exhale less? That's why people get really weird about methane, cow flatulence, and how we need to reduce the number of cows. That's just mostly vegans trying to push their worldview on everybody. And you can see that science is this, it isn't so much some method, actually it is, but it is a methodology that is so fantastically suited to manipulation. You can manipulate people because people are easily manipulated through fear. The fact that the spokesperson for climate change, and I don't know if this is good or if people get really resentful of it. I think there's more resentment to it than anything else. When it was really in its heyday, now everybody's still talking about it because they could still legislate on this and tell people, hey, you know, we're still trying to make sure that the earth doesn't get too hot. Although people have gone back in the record, because we do have data on this, that the earth has been far warmer in the past. And these were days when the earth was more verdant than it is now. Now, you want to bury that kind of information because it's not of service to the orthodoxy right now. And the people who all of a sudden went from being fringe, kind of silly scientists to international rock stars that get to go to a lot of meetings and get fed a lot of rubber chicken and get an open bar. Let me tell you, I've been around enough scientists to know what tends to motivate the scientific mind, and it is having their whatever theory they have touted bring them notoriety, which is a lot of rubber chicken and champagne and stuff like that. And it's you know, and it's heady stuff. It's heady stuff. It'll get to you. Anyway, so yeah, one must be very careful about science. Hopefully people who were part of the whole COVID hysteria, and it was absolute and utter hysteria. We were screwing around with things in labs. The stuff got out. Everybody went insane. But thank goodness it was something that had such quickly diminishing returns. You have to understand, things that happen in nature are much more endurant than what man can do. I guess the term might be the augmented stuff. Human augmented anything still doesn't work as well as natural processes. Although science fiction will tell you all day long that, oh, it's going to bring about our demise. You know, the whole AI thing, you're going, you know what? It says, I don't put any credence in artificial intelligence. It's just faster computers with more memory, bigger processors. AI really tries to be a human simulation, which I think is hilarious. You can get any random person off of the street and they'll do a better job than the best artificial intelligence we have today. And all they're saying is, well, it keeps getting bigger and better, and we just keep doing more of this and more of that, and says, and it's going to come one day. And they keep saying the day has already come. And I think it is a huge, long, expensive, stupid rat hole. And that we would do better looking at the natural sciences rather than the artificial sciences. Ooh. Because there's still amazing things that come from nature that we still have not, we haven't fully figured out. We have not grasped. We found out how to make airplanes from birds and flying fish, things like that. I think it's more the flying fish. I think anyway, it doesn't matter. These were things that came from the natural science. These synthetic things we're doing and thinking that we can overcome our limitations through the synthetic, I think is a huge, journey down a very unprofitable rat hole. I don't think you're going to see the kind of results that you hope for. This is much better to look at nature and what God, for lack of knowing what else, would do it. I know people say when we started doing things in terms of evolution, that was us trying to say that humans are better and that nature takes millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of years to come up with what innovations it could come up with. And it certainly didn't, you know, and people don't think much of it, which is sad because they should. I'm going to have to put some gas in the car, but I can keep doing this while I'm doing that. There's nothing to stop this from continuing. Come on, get in. Oh, I hate people who do that. Like they have no intention of actually merging. I'm going to slow down. And you're going, I'm behind you. You're going to force me to go faster? Try to make this worth your while? Sorry. Getting distracted. We feel safe and comfortable boxes. We want the wonders of nature to be, what's a good word for it? To be so gradual that all of the wonderful things that we do, what we do is so much more important because we were discovering all these things. What we've done is we have decided that we're smarter than God. That really is kind of the very crux of what comes of all this is, you know, we don't believe in God. We think nature just kind of grew out of something and we don't have to come up with evidence for it because we say that it happens over thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Therefore, you don't have to provide me proof that this is the way things have worked. You just have to say that, hey, there was other things and they're gone now. I think their biggest claim to fame is that, hey, we're not gone yet. Therefore, we must be better than just whatever. We must be the pinnacle. Now, God says all this stuff was created for us. And a lot of it is for our study, for us to look at. We have learned a lot from science. Looking at ourselves, we are just as much God's creation as anything else is. And pretty amazing stuff. There's some stuff we have not figured out in the natural sciences. And you go, you know what? We probably need to figure this stuff out. I want to get over, guys. Desperately don't want me to get over. I mean, your way. How dare I? Oof. Anyway. I'm looking for gas stations. We fall into these traps. And what we've learned is science is diminishing returns. It is almost an inescapable manipulation. And it has to do more with how powerful you are, how much influence you can bring to bear to make sure that your pet theory that you've put together and you've worked on doesn't get thrown aside readily. You want something that's a little durable, that won't be proven wrong quickly. And of course you take your chances. And that's what the vast majority of science is it's all a big risk thing. It's a risk analysis. If I do this, how quickly will it be washed away by smarter people or whatever? You know, how do you come to terms with these things? And it is. It's something to be looked at and gone, I don't know. Do I Eastern Street, that's good. I need to be thinking about Eastern because this is a good this is a good gas price. So anyway, I'm getting distracted by having to do all this stuff. Sorry, can't Can't think a few things at once. I'm not really all that good. Okay. Let's see how long this thing's going to keep running. Hopefully it's going to run well during this whole thing. I'm out of the car. Getting gas. So, yeah. So there is that diminishing returns. The fact that in actually doing the scientific method on something, it actually taints the things that you do, the studies that you make. Oh, is there something else about that? Those two are good enough to almost wipe out the scientific method. Of course, our whole system wraps around this stuff. The whole thing of being an expert really has more to do with being scientific than anything else. So are we going to stop behaving this way? No. So what do you do with it? And you go, well, you know, for my part, I play the odds. Or no, I don't. I play the game. I'm not totally unorthodox. I'd be living I would live in a boat, an abandoned boat, and eat garbage food. Which, guy, can I be honest? That sure sounds like me. I gotta take care of my wife. She has needs that require better stuff. Anyway, so, okay, off we go. Got what we needed. And it's really not very good to get off the beaten path too much. People aren't going to pay you money unless you do pretty much what they want. You need to accept management on some level. You need to pay your obeisance to the orthodoxy, to something. And there's actually, if you feel like it's evil, I can think in my mind, after my study of Scripture, that the Lord, Christ, does not have an issue with this situation. You know, render to Caesar's the things that are Caesar's, to God's the things that are God's. You know, is to do what it takes to keep yourself alive. Don't immediately just do things to piss off the powers that be. God doesn't necessarily ask us to do that. Although in Christ's case, you know, they say, well, he pissed off the powers that be. And you go, yeah, but that was because they were terrified of the power that he was getting. And it was starting to challenge their power. And Christ really wasn't that person. So he accepted the fact that in challenging the power structure, which he didn't do directly at all, he wasn't raising an army. To a large extent, he had problems keeping converts because people didn't get him. Anyway, so that's what you have to do to keep things going. Even though you kind of think for a minute, you go, wait a minute, this is, you know, all this heavy breathing about this stuff is so much nothing. I don't think people, even in the aggregate, can really do all that much universally. You know, we're all about saving the earth, and you're going, you know what? Says, I don't think it really is a question of the earth. I think pollution is a thing. Do we need to work on pollution? Yes, and I think we do. And that's a good thing. Because I don't think pollution's a good idea, even if it makes you lots and lots of money. I think everything's really localized. I don't worry too much about the pollution in, say, Los Angeles, for instance, because there's just not enough people here to make a problem. And I'm not that big of a people person anyway. So staying in somewhat obscure places works for me. You know, am I going to make lots of money? No. Not as much as I could. If that's the great indicator, and isn't that really where this particular recording started, is money the great indicator of whatever? Success, goodness. Our scientific method and the things that we tend to look at shine that way. The things that are the most important are the things that have the most money thrown at it. The things that get the most money thrown at it are the things that usually terrify people the most. And they use the mechanics of government to try to take care of the things that scare them the most. Slightly smarter people, because I'm not calling them particularly smart, they've just figured out that this can be manipulated, and you want to know that something's going to be big. You invest in that so that you can get wealthy, and all of a sudden you're kind of an evil person, except for the fact that, hey, man, if you want to be a successful investor in anything, you have to kind of cow to that reality. You know, hey, I think people are going to be terrified of this. And you go, and in being terrified of this, there's good money in it. People are very unhappy that the movie industry isn't doing very well right now and may have been dealt something of the death blow. Big megaplex theaters there's one in Amarillo that's just mothballed. It's like, so we'll put it on the market. We'll see if somebody wants it. You go, its only use is as a movie theater, and there's no movies particularly to watch. Nothing that people want to watch or willing to go to a movie theater. Them trying to sell the ambiance of the movie theater and how it is isn't working. It really was going to see something that you couldn't see anyplace else. That was what made movie theaters rise, and that's what is going to be their downfall, is that it was just a distribution method that was really quite lucrative for a while, but now it's not. You know, it's gone to streaming now and being able to see it at your house. COVID killed off the movie theaters. A lot of them just died from it. And they all say, well, it was COVID, and as soon as that's done, it'll bounce back. And you go, no, it's not bouncing back. Things changed. It was all about the money. It's all about the money, baby. And the money wasn't there for a while. And when the money doesn't come from that, it stops coming from that anyway. So you can be as scientific as you want to about it, but you're just taking gambles. All these things are gambles. The closer you get to God and to natural processes that God put into place, the more stable things will be. Less risky. And you go, you know, I'm a guy that's kind of risk averse. I should be more of a... You know, I should get more into natural production, because to be honest, that's where stability lies. As we get further and further away from this, you know, people don't keep their own gardens. People sequester themselves in houses that are sealed up refrigerator boxes with, you know, that are basically heated and cooled by chemicals produced by our science. And you go, you guys do know that at some point, these might not stay lucrative things. Something may happen. And in happening, all of a sudden your nice refrigerator box isn't worth a whole lot. You'll want to punch some holes in the sides to get some air in there. And they aren't made that way. Most houses are made with windows. Although they do have operating windows, you're not supposed to operate them. You know? Anyway, so the further and further that we get from natural things I've found, the more risky and dangerous these things tend to be. If your life is too dependent upon electricity for your living altogether, you're in a dangerous place, because then you are at the mercy of the situations that produce electricity. And these are rather factory industrial. And if factory industrial stuff grinds to a halt, and simple supply chain problems can bring a place to its knees, everybody thinks that it's all AI that's going to destroy us. And you go, you know what? You take out a few container boats, which is really not very hard to do at all. You're toast. A lot of people will actually die, and die from that more than from the latest disease. And I'm not, I'm not poo-pooing the scientific method completely. I'm just saying it's got some serious limitations. And don't stake your reputation on it and on your understanding of it, things like that. It's not going to save you. Turn to the Lord. Turn to the Lord's ways. Don't throw out these things, but put them in their proper place. Anyway, this is Jason Nemro. You've been listening to Cohen Meanderer. I think I'm going to call this unorthodox, because that's a pretty big thing of what I am. I'm talking about things that challenge the powers that be. They're not worried, trust me. They feel very confident in their stuff. And it's like, well, okay. It turns you on. Anyway, let me leave you with the priestly blessing of my fathers. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift his countenance towards you and give you peace.